this, but short flashes of light, more like this. Scintillation means flashing in Latin. The light produced is picked up by a special photocell that converts some of the light energy to an electric current. In this model, the light sensing cell is similar to that in a photographic exposure meter. In the actual scintillation counter, it's a photomultiplier. The current generated by the photocell makes the needle of the meter move. Notice there's a pulse of current for every flash of light produced by the gammas. If you turn up the brightness of the projector to represent gammas of higher energy, the flashes of light they produce are brighter. The higher energy generates a stronger current. Each pulse of current is in direct proportion to the energy of each gamma. Now let each burst of current be represented by one of the red balls in the trough. Inside the scintillation counter is a memory. That's what those channels on the lower right are supposed to be. The value of a given pulse of current is stored in the appropriate channel. The energy of each gamma determines where the information is filed. As more and more gamma energies are measured, the data in the memory begins to show a pattern. Scanning the channels now shows that most of the gamma energies had a value of 8 in this model. Of course, there are no balls inside a real scintillation counter. It's a highly sophisticated electronic device for detecting, measuring, storing, and displaying gamma energy patterns. Now that you know how it operates, you're ready to use it to measure the energy of the gammas from cobalt-60. The instrument is all set. The gammas are penetrating the crystal, generating flashes of light that are picked up by the photomultiplier. Each burst of current is being measured and then displayed as a tiny dot of light on that round screen. The dots that represent the gammas of the same energy are added together like the balls in the slots. Gradually, the pattern formed by the cobalt-60 gammas develops. Here's a photographic record of the cobalt-60 gamma energies. Later, you'll compare it to the gammas given off by the bowl. What do you suppose the curve for uranium will look like? You'll soon see for yourself. Uranium gammas are creating flashes of light, which are changed to bursts of electric current that will eventually show up on the screen. The gamma radiation from uranium produced this pattern. Here's the photograph of uranium gamma energies. Note how different the pattern is from that of cobalt-60. Now to check the gamma radiation from radium. This is the photograph of the radium gamma energies. Compare it to the others. Remove the radium source and put the bowl under the probe of the scintillation counter. If you suspect that it contains cobalt-60, uranium, or radium, you're right, it does. But which one? The measurement of the gamma energies coming from the bowl will give you the answer. As soon as the bowl gammas have been measured and stored, you can compare them to the patterns of the gamma energies from cobalt-60, uranium, and radium. Here's the photograph of the bowl gammas. Is it similar to cobalt-60? Uranium? Or radium? The pattern of the gamma energies from the bowl matches those of uranium, so the bowl contains radioactive uranium. The orange glaze on the surface of the bowl contains uranium ore, which was once mined for its color. The ore contains radioactive uranium-238 in it. Today, dishes like this are no longer made in the United States because the radiation from the uranium was found to be potentially dangerous. Uranium is now mined for use as fuel in nuclear reactors that power ships and submarines, as well as generating plants that can produce enough electricity for millions of people. For many years, the dials of watches and clocks that glow in the dark like this were coated with radium. Radioactive tritium is now used instead of radium. Radium has proved to be an effective treatment for certain types of diseases. Other ordinary things are also radioactive. This is a mantle for a gasoline lantern. It's slightly radioactive because it's coated with thorium-232. The burning gasoline heats the thorium, producing a brilliant light. Scientists have discovered radioactive elements in many more everyday objects besides uranium bowls, radium dial clocks, and thorium mantles. They found, for example, that you're exposed to a very small amount of low-energy radiation every time you watch television. Not very much, but a measurable amount. The radiation you receive when you watch 1 hour of color television each day in the year can be considered a sort of unit of everyday exposure. 365 hours of watching color television will then have a value of 1. If you live in a wooden house, you receive about 17 TV units of radiation each year from natural radioactive materials in the wood. Bricks are even more radioactive. In a brick house, you get approximately 36 TV units in a year. Everywhere you go, you're bombarded by what is called cosmic radiation. Scientists have identified it as radiation coming from the sun and outer space. Some of it can penetrate the atmosphere, buildings, and people. At this very moment, some of it is going right through you. If you live at sea level, the cosmic radiation you get in a year is about 20 times what you receive from watching 365 hours of color television. Every 200 feet above sea level increases your cosmic radiation by about 1 unit each year. A 10-day vacation high in the mountains exposes you to cosmic radiation of 1 more unit. The ground you walk on is also a source of radiation, adding 7 1/2 TV units a year. Minute amounts of these radioactive elements are taken up and stored by plants. Cereals, Brazil nuts, and tea are some of the plant products that are relatively high in these elements. Animals eat the plants and concentrate the radioactive elements in various parts of their bodies. You're exposed to some of this plant and animal radioactivity in the food you eat, and more in the water you drink. On the average, food and water add 12 1/2 TV units of radiation a year, mostly beta and gamma. You and the people around you give off measurable amounts of beta and gamma radiation. Even the air you breathe is slightly radioactive, giving off alphas, betas, and gammas that add 2 1/2 TV units per year to your total. Nuclear power plants are a source of radiation to people who live near them. Assume you spend 24 hours every day in the year at an average of 5 miles from such a power plant. the radiation you'd receive would be equal to about 1/40th of a TV unit, about 8 days' worth. A single dental x-ray exposes you to 10 TV units. A chest x-ray averages about 100. Medical x-rays expose you to more radiation than any other source. Not including x-rays, the total amount of radiation you get in a year averages about 100 units, as much as watching color television for 100 years. Even without the uranium bowl, the food you eat, the water you drink, and the air you breathe expose you to radioactive elements. Radiation is emitted by almost everything around you. Now you know that no matter who you are, where you go, or what you do, you are constantly bombarded by the alpha, beta, and gamma radiation that's a natural part of your environment, your everyday radioactivity. This is what a 4th of July sparkler looks like from the burning end. Glowing bits of metal shooting out every which way. Trying to predict when any bit of metal is going to ignite or what direction it's going to go is impossible. The unpredictability of the sparks is similar to what scientists believe occurs at the molecular level in all matter. The behavior of any single bit of matter appears to be determined by random chance. And yet scientists have devised a way to measure such unpredictable events. You're going to use their technique to estimate the number of unpredictable subatomic bullets flying through the room and going right through you. This looks like an ordinary piece of rock, but it's not. It's radioactive, as the rate meter or Geiger counter shows. Is a sample of ore with uranium in it. Some of the radioactive uranium atoms are breaking apart, sending radioactive particles out in all directions. If the rock has a lot of uranium in it, it could mean that the area the sample came from may be rich in uranium ore. How much uranium is hidden in the sample? You're going to find out by measuring the amount of radioactivity coming from the rock. Now here's what you're going to be doing. The sparkler represents the radioactivity of the rock. As the uranium atoms within it break apart, various kinds of particles are released, which fly out in all directions. When any atom is going to disintegrate, or what direction the particles are going to go, is completely unpredictable. Now, if both the number and the direction are unpredictable, how can you count them? So many atoms are exploding, and so many particles flying out in so many directions, the result is a sphere of radiation with the rock as the center. Bring in a cardboard shield. Of the sphere of radiation, you will sample only a small portion represented by the slot in the cardboard. On the back side of the cardboard, you can count the number of sparks that go through.
At some distance from the source, not many particles go through the slot. Move it closer to the source. The number of particles going through is increased. Move the slot back to a convenient distance. At that distance, you're going to count the number of particles that go through the slot in a given amount of time. The hot bits of metal are going through a slot in a piece of cardboard, while the actual radioactive particles will go through a slot in the probe of the rate meter. The closer the probe, the more particles enter the slot. So put the probe at a fixed distance from the rock. Say 15 centimeters. You'll be taking a sample of the sphere of radiation with a radius of 15 centimeters. The charged particles that pass through the slot in the probe complete an electrical circuit, which is amplified by the rate meter. You hear clicking sounds from the speaker. You see the light flash. You can read the meter. It, in effect, averages the number of particles and shows the results in counts per minute. The needle indicates an average of 300 particles are entering the probe every minute. At the top of a sheet of paper, write U, the chemical symbol for uranium, or equals 300 counts per minute. At 15 centimeters. Now, if you think you have an accurate measurement of the radiation coming from that rock with uranium in it, you don't. Put the rock in a lead container. Notice the rate meter indicates the lead acts as a shield, blocking the radiation. Hear that click? That particle did not come from the uranium. Something somewhere is radioactive. Listen. Your measurement of the radiation from the uranium in the rock can't be accurate. All the while you were measuring it, radioactivity from something else was affecting the probe and was included in the reading. Now, if the radiation isn't coming from the uranium, where is it coming from? Scientists have tracked down this mysterious radiation and have found that most of it begins somewhere in outer space. Just where, no one knows for sure. Perhaps the sun, perhaps other stars. It comes across the vast distances of space at tremendous speed with almost unbelievable energy. As it penetrates the Earth's atmosphere, billions of collisions occur, smashing atoms and showering the Earth with radioactivity. Scientists have studied these cosmic rays and the tracks they leave behind and found they penetrate every inch of the Earth's surface, going through houses, people, even many feet of solid rock. What you have to do now is count the number of cosmic rays that enter the probe. You'll be sampling the surface of an imaginary sphere, perhaps billions upon billions of light years in radius, and recording the passage of a radioactive particle that is completely unpredictable. You'll be measuring what is known as the background count. Now, most of it is due to cosmic rays, but some is due to the radioactivity of things in the room. Walls, objects, even people. You'll have to subtract the background count from the 300 counts per minute to get an accurate reading for the uranium. How much should you subtract? As a start, count the number of background particles that enter the probe in 10 seconds. Here's how it'll work. That tone will tell you the rate meter has started. Count the number of clicks. One. Two. The second tone indicates the end of the 10 seconds. The rate meter is automatically turned off. Keep a record of the number of clicks. On your sheet of paper, write background count. Under it, trial. One. Time. Ten seconds. And count. After the time, record the number of clicks you hear during the 10 seconds. All right, get ready to start counting. Five background particles went through the probe in that 10 seconds. The rate meter reading was in counts per minute, or 60 seconds. So multiply the 10-second count by 6 to find what the background count would be for 1 minute. That would be the number you'd subtract from the 300 to allow for the background count. But before you do that, take another sample. Ready? Number two, 0 multiplied by 6 equals 0. Which should you subtract from the 300? 30 or 0? Better take another sample. Trial 3. 3 counts. Multiplied by 6 equals 18. The 1 minute rate could be 30, 0, or 18. Here's trial 4. Two counts times 6 equals 12. Ready for trial 5. Three counts times 6 equals 18. One more trial, and you'll have counted for a total of 1 minute, and you'll be able to compare the results. One count times 6 equals 6. Your samples range from 0 to 30. Now add up all 6 trials. 14 counts in 1 minute. If you subtract 14 counts from 300, you get 286 counts per minute as the actual reading of the uranium ore. But can you be sure 14 counts per minute is accurate? Notice that the 1 minute count lies between the extremes of the 10-second counts multiplied by 6. The larger the sample, the more likely it is to reflect the actual background count. This time, double the size of the sample to 20 seconds. See if that's any better. Trial 7, time 20 seconds, counts 4. How does the count compare to the 10-second sample? Get ready for another 20-second trial. Enter trial 8 on your records. One more 20-second sample, and you'll have another full minute. Trial 9, 8 counts. Note trial 9 resulted in twice as many counts as trial 7. Obviously, no single 10 or 20 second count is large enough to give a reliable sample. Now you have 2 1-minute rates, 14 and 17. Which is the more accurate? Count for another full minute. Now that you know how to do it, you can make the count and record it yourself. Record trial 10. Remember, the uranium ore measured 300 counts per minute. Should you subtract 14, 17, or the result of trial 10? At least the 3 1-minute counts are closer together than the 10 and 20 second counts were. Trial 11 coming up. Record trial 11. Here's the 300 counts per minute of the rock. Should you subtract trial 11 from it? Get ready to count one more minute. Trial 12.